Today I'm talking to Jeff Trepishin, better known as Trip, the CEO of Meatable, a cultivated meat company based in the Netherlands. His substantial meat industry experience brings with it a clever strategy to market using the already established food pipelines. Meatable is using cell cultivation technology to grow pork and beef directly from animal cells and will be adding this meat to the farmed meat already used in well-loved food products within the next few years. Trip informs Future Food that profitability is not far off. I'm Alex Crisp and welcome to another episode of Future Food's interviews. All episodes are available on podcast platforms and on Substack, so please like and comment. Okay, so thank you, Jeff Trepishin, the CEO of Meatable, and Meatable is quite a prominent company in the cultivated meat space, also one of the agronomics portfolio companies, and you have some quite big milestones, it seems, over the last year, specifically since you became the CEO there. So if you could just introduce yourself a little bit, sure. Jeff, or should I call you Trip or Jeff? Which would you rather?
I was gonna do that. First, Alex, thanks for having me. And I go by Trip. Trepishin is just too difficult. Okay. And there's a lot of Jeffs out there. So I go by Trip.
Okay. So if you could just sort of briefly sort of say why, sure. You know, who you are and why you joined Meatable and what your background is.
Yeah, so look, I'm old. I've been doing this for 40 years this year and started out in large agriculture, both dairy and meat. And across time, especially the last 25 or so years, I have gravitated to what I consider to be the evolved side of the meat industry and the dairy industry and soy milk early on. But really last 25 years, taking companies and brands in their infancy of a great idea and saying, how does it actually make sense in the marketplace? Because just because it's an interesting and innovative idea doesn't mean it's a business, and especially a healthy one. And so putting those dynamics in place. And I've done that with a great team of people and people that are far more brilliant than I with the ideas. And those were natural, organic, grass-fed, all those words that consumers and others perk up when they hear. Sustainable, regenerative, antibiotic-free, cage-free, all of the things that an evolving and progressive consumer base says, you know, when I think about it, I really want those things. And so, but I've always done that in the confines of traditional meat process. There's livestock, it spends time on the land, and then enters the food system. And about a year ago, I had a conversation with Meatable where they said, look, would you help us? And I said, I really don't understand science. That's not my thing. I'm a food guy. I'm an agriculture guy. And they said, okay, well, we don't have any of that. And we think we're in the food industry and we think we're in the meat industry. And I said, well, let's look at the dynamics. And the dynamics are horrifying. It's, you know, we have climate change. Forget why we have climate change. That stresses the planet. The more people require more food. So we stress the water and soil. They have all degraded to the point where it's going to be difficult to feed 8 billion people, much less 10, and developing economies that require more protein. I've run meat companies in the U.S. They don't have an answer for that. More protein, more animals means further degradation of soil, water, more climate change. So how do you break out of that? I think cultivated meat is the only solution on the table today. It's still a few years from application. But I think they've gone around it the wrong way. I looked at it and said, how does a little tiny new thought, cultivated meat, challenge a meat industry that is $2 trillion globally? It doesn't. It's wrong-headed. The way to do that is to say, we are an ally and a vendor to the meat industry. Give them some tools so they can do it. They can apply it to their own business in their own market, do it the way that makes sense for their consumers, and we're simply a supplier. We spent the last year putting that in place and have had just a huge amount of positive support from the meat industry. So that's how I got here. I feel a little guilty spending a career in meat and not trying to help answer this last question. How do you feed 10 billion people in the next 25 years?
Yeah, I mean, it seems, I mean, I guess your unique perspective, Trip, is in your meat background, and you know there has been some negative pushback towards cultivated meat from
Absolutely.
perhaps from the meat lobbies in the UK and in the USA. So, I mean, from your experience, I mean, how damaging do you think that pushback realistically is? But I mean, as you just said, if you work with them, obviously you are mitigating that, but do you think there will be risk?
Well, yeah, I mean, Alex, I think that's a complicated issue, and if you pull them apart, they become a little more reasonable to address. So, look, anything new that is perceived at potentially damaging an existing industry or group is negative to them. If you're a cattle rancher or a hog farmer or something like that, you go, "Oh, could this be bad for me?" And the answer is absolutely not. Absolutely not. Not one farmer or rancher is going to be impacted negatively by this if it works on a global level. There's supposed to be 70% growth in protein demand over the next 25 years. Livestock farmers and ranchers today can barely keep up with current demand. So if cultivated meat just took some of the growth, wouldn't impact one farmer or rancher. In fact, it takes some stress off them. Today, they're being so pushed to push the land, make it produce just a bit more. This would take a little pressure off. They wouldn't have to supply the growth. That's the role of cultivated meat. Handle the growth. If you look at it from a political standpoint, which is way past my pay grade, is politicians represent people and people in their geography, and they're going, "I'm not sure about this." And I think that's fine to say that. It we have, at least in the US, and I know elsewhere, but I know the US, there are mechanisms that make sure this is safe. It's the FDA, it's USDA from a plant standpoint. They do a fantastic job, and they need to be let to do their job. Let them do it. There's been no issues with its safety. Obviously, its impact on livestock is dramatic. Not one animal is harvested versus 80 billion animals globally in the meat industry. So good for the animals, and it takes some stress off the farmers. Once there's a chance to digest that, we're an ally to the farmers and ranchers, just like the meat companies that make the product. Ultimately, to consumers, because there'll actually be products on the shelves and the menus, but it's going to take a little time. People need to warm up to it, just like the first computer, electric car, cell phone, anything that challenges the established thing needs a little time to be digested.
I suppose in
No
a way
pun
it can
intended.
also be kind of likened to perhaps the kind of oil and gas or tobacco or these industries that obviously had a lag, where people in the beginning were not necessarily admitting that what was happening was perhaps was potentially harmful to the soil or
Right.
to the food system or whatever, and kind of carried on re regardless. It's the same with the kind of asbestos industry. So I assume that part of the reason you went to Meatable is for these reasons, right? It's, sort of
Absolutely.
ethical, sustainable, and
Yeah, I thought, Alex, they were best positioned. And I did. I can't evaluate the science. I can talk to people that can help me understand it. But once they did, they seemed to have the patents that allow it to do things as a business person, not this altruistic moment of trying to feed the world, but saying practically, if the meat companies are going to use it as a resource, which is what it is, and license it, would I, as as a guy in the meat industry that ran companies, would I do it? And so there's some questions that have to be answered, and we did, and we are. One is that it has to be cost effective. You can't say, would you do this and spend a lot more money? They don't have a lot more money. Meat industry's margins are narrow. And so it has to be affordable. It has to be scalable so that if a meat company says, I'd like to do it, you can make enough of it. It has to be something that solves some of their problems. Today, you raise an animal, it takes a long time, uses a lot of feed to feed them. It uses water and soil, takes those crops, uses them in an animal instead of, having consumer consumption. And then when you harvest it, you're only using about half the animal. The other half, it finds a home, but not a great one. And so they're always challenged with how do they figure that out? How do they not pollute the water? How, because plants are big and there's discharge from plants and so on. And so how do they do that? There's livestock disease that could wipe out huge areas of herds. We're seeing that in the US with egg-laying hens in the egg industry. 8% of the supply in the last year and a half has been euthanized, disappeared, doubled the price of eggs or more. So you have to be able to answer those things. And to me, cultivated meat is, even though I don't know the science, cultivated meat solves so many of those problems. They can do the thing that I just couldn't put my mind around. Now I can, but I couldn't at the beginning, is they can make a pound of product in 12 days. It takes me a year if it's livestock. If it's cattle, it takes 3 years. And you go, 12 days? So if you're running a business and you're trying to forecast supply, you're trying to have enough supply at the right moment, and you have to plan 1, 2, 3 years in advance or 12 days in advance. It's hugely different. The waste, zero. You only make what you actually want versus an animal where you're going, half of it I didn't really want. So there's some fundamentals that have allowed the meat industry, once they sit with this idea for a bit, that this is a good solution for them. We're having dialogue with a huge number of them today, well over 20.
And it is only and I suppose, you asked me before we started recording whether I suppose what my motivations were, and I guess it was the solution. It was the science seemed so incredible to me that this was possible, that there was such a solution available, but nobody knew about it. And it's like, what is this actually something that could happen, that we could have everything that we already love without having to, harvest, as you put it, kind of 8 billion animals a year. Well, more than 8 billion animals a year.
80, 80,
80
80
billion
billion.
animals a year. Well, yeah, I'm obviously not including fish and also dairy cows as well, and
Right.
obviously the methane that comes from those
No.
animals as well.
Yeah.
So if there's a solution, then you can start talking about the problem more when you have a solution, and that's what I like about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that it's like anything new, if you just start talking about what's different, people can poke at it. I think if you talk about what does it solve, it almost makes it irrelevant that it's cultivated meat. So if you talk about water supplies, whether it's available for human consumption, wells drying up, aquifers being depleted, and runoff creating dead spots in bodies of water, or soil degrading. They say today 40% of global agriculture land, so in essence, the topsoil, 40% of that land is degraded so that it cannot produce at a reasonable yield of whatever it's supposed to raise. At this rate, it'll be 90% by 2050. I can't put my mind around that. 90% of the global ag land will not be able to produce what it produces today. We're going to have 2 billion more people in 2050. So you start to talk about that and then say, well, what does it take? The science already exists. Now it has to be scaled. It has to go from, a production line where you make a little bit to you make, millions of metric tons, just like the meat industry does. And so that those conversations are happening, and it's going to take a couple of years to be able to start to scale at that level. But you have to start to finish.
And so you think it'll just be a couple of years, do you? I mean, obviously the cultivated meat is still in its relatively early stages, but obviously a lot has happened in the last year or two, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
It's really kind of
Well,
come on leaps and bounds.
yeah, I think, Alex, what happens is you spend time and then there's a moment of breakthrough. And so, for example, we've been working on taste. When I say we, Meatable has, I have not been working on taste. And what they came back and they said, look, this product is fundamentally different, Meatable product, fundamentally different than the rest of cultivated meat because of the way the cells congregate and grow. And so the technical word differentiation, it under a microscope, it looks exactly like the cells from a pig because they are cells from a pig and they're activated the same way an animal does, except an animal takes a year. This takes 12 days. The rest of our industry takes about 45 days. It's not complex. The cells are not complex with taste fat as part of the cells, part of the dynamic. And you put them side by side and taste them, which we did a month ago, and with meat companies. And they were like, well, this one tastes identical to normal pork, and this one doesn't. And we go, I know, this is non-differentiated cultivated meat. This is ours. And they go, I can't tell the difference. And we go, I know, because there isn't any difference. So taste is there, which consumers still have to like it. The cost is tumbling, and as you scale it, it's more efficient. That's the next domain. We're working with partners right now that are figuring out how do you go from a laboratory to a pilot plant, which is where the industry is, to production of 25 million pounds a year. Or 50 million pounds a year, or 100 million pounds a year. A typical pork plant of size produces about 200 million pounds a year. So you got to get into the scale of the industry. That'll take about 3 or 4 years, but it'll happen in chunks. First, a plant for 25 million, then 50, then 100. 100 is very practical.
Well, 3 or 4 years sounds quite optimistic. I mean, last year people were talking about 10 years. So kind of this year they're now talking about 3 or 4 years. So it's, I mean,
Well,
I spoke to Meatly, who do the dog food, and he was saying that they will be at price parity within a year, within 12 months. So I'm assuming that's, that is about scale up, clearly, isn't it? In order to.
it could be, and also compared to what it would be, depending on what they're comparing it to, probably very premium product, which
Organic
would make
chicken, I
sense.
suppose,
Right.
yes.
And that's what it takes for our part of it, the human food part. The key for me, Alex, is you have to have the right tool for the job. Our scientists which we have 70 of, are amazing at the science. They're not amazing at the scale. The scale's a different tool. Those are people that are in the equipment, media, and that process side. And that's really not the cultivated meat side of the industry. Those are other people that go, boy, we know how to take something from this size and make it this size, whether they're vaccine manufacturers, an arm in pharma, or in food, breweries. The technology exists where they say, I can take it from a little and make it a lot and watch the costs fall. That's what we're working on right now with partners, several of them across the globe, coming together to figure out how to do this because we're trying to be part of a global industry. We need the best the globe has to offer on figuring out scale. I hired a new CTO to lead us that spent 30 years just scaling pharma.
Okay.
That's the next domain.
Yes. Well, yeah, obviously kind of pharma bioprocesses are like 1,000 times more expensive than what the food processing
Yes.
would be, right? Yeah.
Right.
So
And that's why it's going to have to get out of the normal lab thinking on this and enter the food side. This has to be able to be made by meat companies or with meat companies. And it has to be done at a scale and a cost that is fundamentally different. So pharma can only take that so far, and then it has to transition to the food side of the industry.
Is it going to go into a sausage? Is it going to be like a pork sausage? Is that the idea of it? So you don't have to have the obviously it's not going to be like a pork joint because you're not going to need that kind of mouth feel, that kind of texture. If you put it into a sausage, it can be it, yes, it can be the kind of cell mass, I suppose, right?
Yeah, so
The idea.
let me describe it for you. So meatable is an ingredient for a meat company. So now go ahead, think of a meat company and they make breakfast sausage or whatever they make. And today they take a certain amount of meat, spices, and so on, blend it together, cook it, and there's the sausage. What we're saying and what we've shown them is if you take about 25% of the livestock meat out or plant-based, same way, and put in meatable, about 25% of the recipe. You can't tell the difference if it's livestock that cook it. Everything's exactly the same because it's pork. Cook it, it comes out. You can't taste the difference. It's much better for the planet and the animals. And there's some potential upside in nutrition because you can control the fat. If it's plant-based, same activity, but the huge benefit on the plant-based side is that the taste at 25% blended tastes almost identical to the livestock sausage, which is the problem for plant-based products today is they just don't deliver that texture and that taste. And at 25% meatable, it does. We just did a tasting with meat companies, and they were like, that is fundamentally better with meatable. And they couldn't tell the difference on the livestock based. And I think that's what has to happen for consumers to want it. Chefs to put it on a menu. It has to taste like that.
And so some of your product will be mixing a hybrid of animal farmed, farmed animal
Yes.
and cultivated meat. So it could be sort of
Yes.
75% farmed animal and 25% kind of cultivated meat. Okay.
Right.
Okay, that's
Yeah.
interesting.
And because we're never going to compete with the meat companies, there's never going to be a meatable branded item trying to take away anything from a meat company. We'll just be the Intel chip inside.
Okay. Good. Yeah, good. Okay, so that's interesting. So recently you've kind of you've kind of gone into Thailand in to a degree, right? So following in the footsteps of people like Aleph Farms, I'm not sure who was there first, whether they were following your footsteps or you were following theirs,
Well, ours is pretty new news, so I'm sure they were first then.
okay. So I mean, it is the idea to kind of open up a production facility there in Thailand and to use that for Asia.
Yeah, so that's really up to the meat company.
Right.
And so there's two things that are happening is we have traditional meat companies that would normally take livestock, harvest, and then fabricate, that's what they call fabricate, make products for consumers. The second group are companies, think of kind of CPG companies. They're not meat companies, but they buy meat and they put it in a product like an entree or something like that. And those companies are saying, well, I just want to buy the raw material. I don't want to make it. So we just had a summit in February in our headquarters in the Netherlands. And we invited meat companies like that, both types. And so they're starting to get together, which is very interesting to watch. And they're saying, if you build the plant and make meatable, we'll buy it from you. We'll be a strategic customer. And so the conversation, and I'm heading out the first week of April to go visit four of them that are getting together to talk about where do we build that plant?
Okay.
How is that going to work? Am I a strategic customer for how much? How big a plant do we build? So the answer is the meat industry is going to pick, and it could very well be Thailand. Singapore, while it's one of the forerunners in thought, it's an island with 6 million people, so it will have a presence, but it's not probably going to be the provider. That's going to be located in a more central location for those people. So whether that's Thailand or South Korea or China or Japan, all of those countries have meat companies talking about this with us.
Okay. And does it
But
depend?
Asia seems very bright on this.
Yes. And does it depend to some degree on who gives you approval,
Yes.
kind of regulatory wise first? Have you
Yeah.
applied for have you applied in all of those
So,
jurisdictions?
no, it's a great question. So we've applied in Singapore. That's moving through the system. The other countries we're in dialogue with, but the way we think, at least that I think, is that I know I'm not the smartest guy in the room. So in Thailand, the best partner to get Thai approval through the regulatory process is a Thai meat company, not Meatable from the Netherlands. The same goes for South Korea, for China, for Japan. It's the in-country meat company takes the lead with us and their country's regulator. It's just a better way. If I knock on their door and say, hi, I'm from the Netherlands, I'd like to talk to you, not as well received as the multi-billion dollar meat company with a headquarters in the country knocking on the door saying, we'd like to talk to you about this. So it's the same process. It's just one of them has almost like a sponsor in the country. We think that's a smarter way to do it. And we have, at this point, about 15 countries beginning that process with us and the meat company.
And I know when I spoke to Didier Toubier from Aleph Farms, he was saying that in Thailand, the approval rates from consumers for cultivated meat was in the kind of 80s and 90%, which compared to Europe and the US is significant. So, and so they're clearly open to the idea of kind of innovation in food, more so perhaps than we are in Europe and the US.
Yeah, what's interesting about that, Alex, is we've got together with the Good Food Institute and talked to them about the studies they've done. It seems like one, most consumers have never tried a cultivated product. So it's more like conceptually, how do you feel? So it's really about, well, what do you know about it? Because you sure the heck haven't tried it. And but whether it's the US or Europe or countries in Asia, all of them had better than 50% of the people that did the research respond in a positive way. So I don't know. I'm sure the research was fine. Directionally, it seems like there's a big enough group of people that are interested. I think the proof is going to be, what does it taste like and what does it cost like?
And also, of course, in I suppose in Thailand and Asia, a lot of the meat is imported, perhaps because they don't necessarily have the kind of grassland to feed
Yeah,
cows.
just depending on the protein. Yeah. Beef, pork, lamb, poultry. Yep.
So
Could
there'd
be.
be. And so, I mean, I spent a lot of time in the Far East, and I know that the things that are available to eat are kind of wide and varied and sometimes very unusual. So people are not, in Europe, what's been your experience of kind of getting things approved in Europe and the consumer?
Yeah. So look, countries each have their own standards. Some of them are emerging as we speak, and so they're still ill-defined. And so some countries have concerns about or qualifications that are different than others. So Europe has its own set of rules. And we're in discussion with them about what is the impact on the way we do it. Asia, not all one answer. Each country has sometimes just a slight difference, some more substantial. So when you think about it, there's only three places this is approved globally. Now UK for pet food, but prior to that is Israel, Singapore, and the US, and the US is rethinking their process and rules. So once those are identified, then you can sit and talk with the regulators. And as much as I don't like anything that goes slow, especially when problems are big, but they have a job to do to protect the public. And so we need to just clearly understand what the issues are so that we can make sure that they're comfortable. And I haven't seen anything from any of the countries that would make them uncomfortable. But you do have to follow their process, and their process takes some time.
You did have a tasting session in Holland, which was the first in the EU, I think. Well,
Yes.
unless Iceland, because I think they had a few tastings in Iceland, didn't they, in 20, which was never really reported, it seemed. I think Ivy Farms might have had, I was kind of doing some research, and I found in some small corner of the internet that apparently they had some tastings there.
Yeah.
But anyway, talking
Yeah.
about your tastings, how complicated was that to organize with the
Yeah.
government
So,
and EFSA and
yeah.
everything?
So it predates me joining. They did it this time last year, just before I started. And they did one with in the Netherlands. And so, in it, they had chefs, renowned chefs, and obviously key people in government and so on. And so that went well. The process, if the products aren't approved yet for human consumption, not gotten the rubber stamp, received the rubber stamp from the government, then it has to be under strict rules. People have to watch it and make sure it's fine. And so that's really when these tastings occur. They have to follow those rules that the government puts in place for safety of a product that isn't approved in the marketplace yet. And so it's just usually about the number of people that can try it. You can't do a lot of people. And so it receives that kind of check off of it's safe for a controlled sample. And that's what we did in the Netherlands. That's what we've done in Singapore,
Okay.
and where other places that allow it, we'll do similar things.
I mean, I know EFSA can be a little bit slow at coming forward. So I'd imagine with something like that, you would need to get one individual or a couple of individuals who back the science, who are prepared to kind of champion it, come forward.
And look, I look at these as, if you want to do a tasting, what's the goal of the tasting? Is it to build confidence with, say, someone like yourself, so you go, wow, that was amazing, or what's the goal? And so I know that the Netherlands has been very, very supportive of Meatable and their ability to do these controlled samplings or tastings. And so we follow their guidelines. We work in great concert with them, and they've been very supportive. And so we're able to do that, but we don't abuse it. We want to do it when it's important to do, which is largely not for PR. It's because we want someone that is important to the success of this idea to be able to say they've tried it before they're a fan, an advocate, or not.
Yeah.
Is understand what we're talking about, and that's really, you got to taste it to be able to do that.
I suppose often it's a contractual obligation, perhaps as well, if you've got partners and collaborators as part of that agreement, there needs to be an official tasting right
Well,
before.
and we've used, like, Singapore very friendly to this idea, of course. And so we've had meat companies that aren't in Singapore that have said, let's go and formulate a product in Singapore at a facility we use, and they get to try it in Singapore. They get to sample taste, get chef's input, get some consumer input. Singapore is very friendly to that. And so we've used Singapore as a bit of a test market for the meat companies that we're working with, because that's the place that they have the most flexibility to say they want to be able to formulate and try. And we support them. And that's really what we're talking about, expanding the concept from Singapore to any other country that will allow it, so meat companies can start to embrace it. At some point, the governments, general speaking, governments need to say the problems that are we talked about at the beginning, these global issues, are of such a degree of magnitude that they need to help solve this problem. Not just say meat companies are the problem, but help them solve it. So regulatory support with speed. The investment community, we attended an event very recently, and we were the only food company amongst many companies that were there seeking financial support to invest in an idea. And I said, my God, what is more important than being able to feed the planet? And it's attracting very little support, food in general. Whereas a lot of money is going into tech, and we need to think about that. Tech's important, but feeding people is pretty important too.
Yeah. So you've kind of used that as part of your kind of business plan. You are kind of licensing the tech as well as kind of, sort of selling the product.
Yeah, almost think about it, Alex, as it's almost like franchising. We have a way to do something that works. We have the equipment, we have the science, we have all of that. It's a package. And if you're a meat company, you can say, I'd like to, in essence, get a franchise. It's a license, so that I can do it for my business. And we provide them with all of the support, all of the technology, the media, the cells, a way to get the equipment from someone that makes the equipment. And so it's relatively easy for them to apply it. If they didn't do that, I don't know how a meat company, coming from a meat company, I don't know how they would ever figure this out.
Nice.
It is light years apart from what a meat company
It's
does.
an interesting idea that, isn't it, as a business model, because I guess operating a bioreactor isn't necessarily like, like an automated kind of milking machine. It's quite complicated, and so I expect when you are operating these, you would also have to provide staff assistance,
You
kind
do. Yeah, we have tech. We would have our plan is to have tech support
of.
in every plant that a meat company builds, whether that's one or 100 or however many, we will have a meatable tech on site every day.
Okay. Interesting. So, with all this, Trip, how soon do you foresee Meatable becoming profitable?
Profitable, probably about 3 years.
3 years. That's pretty good, huh? Yeah, that's quite
Well,
ambitious.
yeah, there's and the 3 years is common to both of your questions. You know, it will get scaled. We'll have a plant producing scaled volume, 3 year timeline. We already have taste, we already have the time it takes to make a pound. Now it's scale. Once you scale, that's where the efficiency is. If I said, what was the cost of the first, electric car, you'd go, oh my God, it is so big and it's so costly. And then you go, oh, but what if we're making thousands of them? And you go, well, the cost falls. It's the same. So it's about a 3 year timeline to that scaled plant. It's not our plant, it's a meat company plant. At that level of production, and we get a royalty for each pound. That's how we make money. And so the meat company isn't paying a lot of upfront cost other than the building their own plant. But then we make money. And so I view them, they're one and the same. The timeline for one is the timeline for the other one.
So, I mean, of course, Holland and the Netherlands is historically where it all started as well, isn't it? So it's
Is.
with Ira Van Heelen's father, and so it's, which I think it was, what was it, 300,000 euros for a burger back in 1995 or something.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because there's a museum in Leiden, which is where our office is, our headquarters is. We just, when we had these meat companies in on February 13th, we had them in our offices. We went to the museum. We viewed the burger, the patty.
It's
And it
still
was just very interesting to fast forward to that moment as they all looked at it and
Yeah.
said, this was, this is where it started. This is it. Now it's your turn. Let's
Okay.
start feeding the world. Let's prepare.
It's very exciting. I mean, and so what excites you most? I mean, which country do you think you are going to be selling in first? I suppose that I'm
Yeah.
asking that, which is going to be first at giving you permission, and where will you be operating first?
Yeah, so look, Singapore will be first. They have Singapore, when it went through COVID, realized that they had only 1% of their food was produced onshore. They had the ability to fix that during COVID, but they learned the lesson. So they have a program called 30 by 30. They want 30% of their food produced onshore by 2030. We're part of that, as I'm sure our other cultivated meat companies. So we'll be part of a food supply to 6 million people as we move forward. I think that'll be the first one where you and I, if we were there, we could go to a restaurant and order something or go to a grocery store and buy it. But what's next? Because 6 million people is more proof of concept than it is a material impact on global meat. And so my belief is that based on the interest today, several Asian countries are on the same basic timeline. Pork is huge in their diet. We're primarily a pork company, even though we have beef fast following it. And so I think that'll be which one of those countries they're going to pick. We're not. I think Europe, especially the UK, is moving with speed. Australia's moving with speed. So they're right there. We're pursuing both today. The US needs a little time. I can argue both sides of it with them. Is this going to take 4 years or 4 days? I'm not sure which one it is. But I think the progressive nature will take hold. The spirit of innovation will take hold as people start to say, why not?
I get the feeling that a few companies now are kind of looking to the east rather than to the west in regard to kind of starting this technology.
And I think that Asia having some success will probably kickstart the US in that process too. But that's up to them. There's a big world to try to help here, and we'll start with the ones that want to start on it first.
Okay. Well, one more question before I let you go, Trip. There was some that I saw some news about you working with Pelagon on cultivated leather. So what's that all about?
So here's the way to think about it, and then it makes perfect sense. So if you were to raise cattle, bring them to a plant, harvest the cattle, and say, well, now we have meat for hamburgers and steaks and all those things, you also would have a hide. And the hide gets processed and tanned and gets sold into the leather industry. So Paleogen said, well, we don't want livestock hides from cattle. We want a technology that's that can replace, can produce things that come from livestock. And we said, well, if we can make meat, we can make leather. And so we're working with them. We worked truly in concert with their team and our team, same laboratory for extended period of time, and came up with a way to make cultivated leather. And they're experts on that marketplace. And we said, you do it. We're just, again, helping a leather company, just like we're helping a meat company.
But obviously it's not the same process, because in the meat industry, the kind of leather is a sort of throwaway
Yeah, it's
part
a byproduct.
of, a byproduct of the meat. But with this, it's a whole new science, right?
It
It's
is. But if you think about it, Alex, it's the same idea. If you took any part of the animal and you said whether it goes into food, whether it goes into pharmaceutical industry, some parts of animals are produce things for that, whether it's hides or whatever the application, the cultivated meat industry takes a cell from an animal and grows it. It's the real animal. So the question is, what are you asking the cell to make? And in this case, you're asking it to make leather, but you can ask it to make anything.
Well, I'm very excited to see what Meatable does next, and of course I'm always watching and I'm always waiting. So, thank you very much for coming on and
Oh, my
talking to
pleasure.
me, Trip.
My
It's
pleasure.
been wonderful to have you on Future Foods. And stay in touch, and hopefully I'll see you at some point at something.
Well, I know you're hosting a great event this October. I'll be part of that. And
I'm
so,
involved in that. So if
so
you're
I
there
wish
in
you great
October,
success. If we can be helpful, let us know.
will do. Okay, brilliant. Maybe hopefully see you there then. All right,
That'd be
take
great.
care, Trip.
Thank you, Alex.